Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 11th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a very travel-weary Scott Long.
But you know, this time I'm with you on this.
Yeah, actually, you've been with me on the last couple trips. You skipped out on New York, which, of course, wasn't business, so skipping out the wrong term. But
I would have liked to have seen Giant Stadium.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, it's the Meadowlands Stadium. Please, the Jets play there, too.
Yeah, they played there, too, for the last 50 years, and it wasn't named that, so I'm just going to have
I'm going to call it Bon Jovi Stadium, if you don't mind.
Yeah, don't open up that can of worms, buddy. I have been restrained, and let's just move on.
Oh man. But yeah, we've been a little traveling fools, and it was nice to sleep in my own bed last night. And but you know, we've seen a lot of stuff, and later on in the show we'll talk about our Great Tunica road trip, and then next week we're going to talk about Palm Beach and. And wherever else we've gone in here. But, you know, we finally get to play some poker, too, on these trips.
Yeah.
Remember those good old days when we did those trips and we never had time to squeeze in poker?
Yeah.
Now we're finding some time. And I got to tell you, Chris, I had a very interesting decision from a tournament director during our travels that I thought the nation would like to chime in on. Because, you know, we get all these emails, you know, a couple every month from folks talking about some kind of really weird, unfortunate thing that happened in their home game, you know, much like our Badoogie incident.
Yeah.
In ours. And, you know, a lot of those, we were saying, well, you know, that wouldn't happen in a brick and mortar because you got dealers. And, but here's a situation where I thought it was really weird what happened. And I didn't relish the tournament director's role in trying to sort this out. But here we go. I'll try to keep it short. But it was the final table of a multi-table tournament. All right. At this point, everybody was in the money, so there's no bubble or anything like this. It folds around to the short stack, who pushes all in, okay?
Right.
It then folds around to the big blind, who asks the dealer how much more, all right? The dealer counts the stack. It says 16,000, and she's like, that'll be 8,000 more for you to call. And as soon as she says that, Chris, she purse. And she covers him up with her hands, and she looks at the tournament director and is like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to say that, right? And he, you know, they start talking about, I guess in this room that they don't like you to do the math for the players.
Right.
And so she's a little flustered, and while this was going on, the big blind thinks about it and goes, well, you know, I really can't fold for that. I call. And so she's still flustered and talking to the tournament director. And while this is going on, the big blind looks down and starts counting out his call, right?
Right.
But he had flipped his cards face up, and the dealer reaches over, grabs them, and mucks them. And then starts pushing the pot to the short stack. And then the big blind looks up and goes, wait a minute, I called. And, oh dear, the dealer says. At this point, not only was his cards in the muck, but all the discards were in the deck now, as if she was getting ready to shuffle the next hand. And the really weird thing is nobody at the table said anything. All right, so no one tried to stop her.
Yeah.
I was watching. I have no vested interest in this. I was just watching. And I clearly heard him say call, and I thought it was weird when I saw her reach for the cards. But and maybe this is a violation of Beau Revoir's rule number 12. but I didn't think it was my place to go, whoa, 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 he called. because maybe I didn't hear it correctly. You know what? You know, I'm not in the hand. I'm not in the tournament, right?
Yeah.
So maybe I should have said something. So so here we go. Here's the situation. We have the cards are mucked. You got the other mucks on them. Even though we knew it was a queen and a six, I mean, you could try to fish out his cards, but the deck is spoiled at this point. And now the tournament director is put to the test. How do you decide what to do in this situation? Now, before you answer, you know, I'll tell you what the decision is, and then we could talk about it. The tournament director thinks for a while, and he's like, you know, guys, this is no one's fault, and we're not going to punish anyone because it's no one's at fault. And what we're going to do is just do the handover. We're going to return everyone's bets. So they return everybody's bets, including the small blind, the antes, dealt out the next hand. And the funny thing is, and the good thing for the tournament director, is the same sequence happened. Folded around the small blind and pushed all in. Folded around the big blind called. This time, the card stayed up. And the big blind again had the best hand, and it held up and knocked the short stack out. And all is well. That ends well. But I pose to you, Chris, is this a decision that you would have expected, and was it the right decision?
Boy, I tell you, you know, there are so many ways to interpret things, you know, and just like in poker, there are so many ways to play a hand. I wouldn't say that it was wrong, and I wouldn't say that it was right, okay? I'm not trying to...
I like when you take a stand there.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, you know, be wishy-washy, but if I was being the hard ass that I can be, I would do one of two things. One, and a lot of things come to mind here, which is why it's so difficult for me to answer, but you remember that there is an eye in the sky, and these cards were folded face up, which means you could actually identify the two cards. Now, people will say, well, wait, he's supposed to protect his hand. Okay, so he's supposed to protect his hand, but what about the fact that it's a tournament, and this is the last hand for someone? Both hands have to be shown for that hand to be played out. So I would think that you would either go to the eye in the sky, you would ask the player what his cards were, you would ask the players around him if they saw the cards, because he did put them face up, take his cards out of the muck, shuffle, regardless of all the other cards that were in there, because now I remember the story from TJ Cloutier when he was playing in that big cash game with Al Crux. And the guy had pocket 10s, and another person folded a 10, and another person folded a 10. The massage therapist was massaging them and everything. And then they had a screw-up with the muck, and they had to reshuffle all the cards back in, and it was like 10s versus kings. And the only way this guy could win with the 10s is if another 10 came, but they both were mucked. But now they're reshuffled. Now the 10 comes out on the flop, flops a set, and beats Al Crux's pocket kings, which is the worst bad beat in history. So it's a precedent there. It does happen where all the other cards do get shuffled in and then have to get remixed when something like that happens and then redealt. So if it were me and there was time, because, you know, if this happened in Florida, you know, there might not be time. It's the end of the night, end of the tournament, and you have to close the place by midnight, and it's, you know, 11:30 or something. Maybe you can't afford to go to the eye in sky, but, you know, time-wise. But if it's just a regular event, middle of the day, I stop the tournament, and I go to the eye in the sky, and I have them look down, confirm what his two cards are, keep the other guy's cards out of the way, shuffle the cards up, and then redeal the whole hand out. That's what I would have done if I had time and could do that, feasibly could do that. That would have been my ruling.
All right. That's fair.
I don't know if it's right or not. I mean, I'm sure there could be something that, you know, says so sad, you know, we're sorry you didn't protect your hand, and because that's like the hard-ass thing. He didn't protect his hand regardless of what happened to it, regardless that it was face up, and everything gets pushed to the short stack. But
yeah, you know. And there's some interesting discussion from a couple of other railbirds after this, because I kind of whispered to somebody, I'm like, ooh, boy, this is tough. But, you know, I'm not sure I would have made that decision. One of the guys said, yeah, too bad, so sad. You know, hey, got to protect your hand. Hand's mucked. It's dead. Got to give the chips to someone else. And the problem I have with that is that I understand protecting your hand when you just make a call and your cards are still face down and you don't have a chip on them or something like that. But at what point do you have to continue protecting your hand? When it's all in, you flip the cards up, you say, I call. At that point, really, are you still responsible for protecting your hand from a dealer that mucks them?
Right.
That seems a little extreme to me, but, you know, maybe that's the rule. I don't know. So, but another gentleman said, you know what? What I would have done is, you know, hey, the cards were mucked. The guy can't win the pot. I would still award the pot to the small blind, but I'm not going to make the big blind complete the call. And there's that's an interesting way of doing it because in the dealer's mind, it was a fold. So I don't know how you could compel someone to call when the dealer thought that it was a fold and no one else said anything.
Right.
At that point, that would almost make sense to me as well, too. So, I mean, I guess any one of those three ways could have gone, and the fourth way that you did. And you know what? I'm gonna side with you. I'm going to say your way was the best.
Hey, cool.
But again, a lot of time involved, too, you know.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, too,
you got to get it right, you know. You know, hey, you know, this isn't baseball. We have instant replay.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, there is a camera. And there's a lot of pressure, too, to come up with the exact perfect answer at that moment when, you know, I've been playing poker for how many years, and we've never heard of that happening or seen it happening. So I'm sure the tournament director probably hadn't seen that before either. And he had to make a fair ruling on the spot right there. And, you know, who knows? It might have been late in the night, and they, you know, who knows? But... yeah, I would think that if you could go to the eye in the sky, let's do it. You know, get it right. We can get it right, so let's do it.
I guess the lesson here is, folks, this stuff doesn't just happen in home games. Oh, but, you know, hey, our favorite home game is our Anti-Up online series, Apes, the Anti-Up Intercontinental Poker Series. And we were traveling so much, Chris, that we both forgot that it was Wednesday night. I was doing some work, and I'm like, you know what? I got to get the podcast file ready. I'm like, oh, my golly.
Oh, my golly.
Apes is tonight. So I message you, hey, just in case you forgot like I did. And you're like, oh, my gravy. So fortunately, we remembered in time and got in and played. And I say fortunately because it was fortunate for the folks that cashed.
And took our money.
we were decidedly dead many in this tournament. I just could not get anything going. I started off well. I had pocket aces on the first hand.
Jeez.
And won. But, you know, for some reason, I just, you know, at some point you just wake up and you're like, wait a minute, what happened to my stack? It's gone. And I was out.
I my stack looked like a roller coaster, at six flags. I mean, I have to admit, I was having fun last night and playing loose and just talking with everybody and joking around and really trying to just play these god-awful hands and making them win and get everybody all on tilt and everything. And I just kept going up and down, up and down, up and down. And it was a lot of fun that way, too. All of a sudden, I got 2,500, and then I have 600, then I have 2,300. It was just hilarious. And I was wondering, you know, am I going to actually go in one direction? And then ultimately, yeah, I went out. So, but it was fun. You know, and it's weird because the limit aspect, I was determined to not let it frustrate me, and then once it did, I said, all right, you know what? I'm just going to have fun tonight instead of get frustrated. And that's what I did. I ended up having, you know, up and down night, but it was cool. Sure. I did have one hand I want to talk about real quick.
It was
against Nick Mariana. Yeah, with the little bulldog icon from his...
Mariana.
Yeah, yeah.
Marianne so, from Gilligan's Island with an A. That's how I always remember it.
The skipper, too.
And, even though I could never get it right, even after he told me that.
He was on my right, and I had been showing some really crappy hands and really playing a lot of hands, so there's no way anybody could put me on a hand. And I had ace-king suited, and I had raised, and two other callers came in, and I missed a flop completely, and they checked to me, and I actually checked behind. The turn I missed, and then I think I bet, and he called. On the river I missed, but it was like a double paired board, or it was some sort of board that I just didn't believe he had anything.
Right.
And I checked to him, and he bet, and I raised him with ace king high, and he called, and he had ace queen. It was hilarious.
Wow.
And I'm like, how do you like that call, baby? And he's like, good God. Or how do you like that raise? I said, he's like, I knew you didn't have anything. I said, I knew you didn't have anything too. We were going back and forth. It was hilarious. That was like the best part of the night. We had a lot of fun. So.
Oh, man. Well, we had a similar situation on our table, which is a lot of fun too. But I had a situation where a player check raised me on the turn when I had nothing. Of course, I called. And he bets on the river. And I'm like, well, you know what? He got a call. It's limit, right? I only have to make that decision. It has to be right once every 10 times.
Right.
Called. Took it down, baby. And I'm like, yeah. Sorry, I think I said something like, it's tough to bluff on the river and limit, my friend. Three hands later, I did the exact same thing to him. He called me, took it. And I'm like, yep, see? Told you.
Yep, and I got called, too, by a player with, I had two spades that were low, but he'd raised I was in the blind. He raised in the button, and I thought, all right, he's just trying to steal. So I called, and I had a flush draw. So I'm, like, betting it and check raising it and everything. Gets all over the end, and at the end, I couldn't win because I didn't make the flush, so I bet. And he calls with ace high, but he had the same flush draw as me, so I'm glad I didn't get there. But he called me with ace high, and I'm like, how could you do that? And I'm like, wait a minute, I just did that like 15 minutes ago. You know, it's just one more bet, you know? It was pretty classic.
We had fun in the chat at our table, too. I had a hand where I had, I believe it was like ace five, and a lot of people in. I was in the big blind. Flop came an ace. I check raised just to find out how strong my ace was. I got called. The turn was a five, and I'm like, oh, yes. Gosh, you're going to love that when you're just messing around. And you hit your gin card, right? Well, it turns out I end up losing the pot because that card completed somebody's wheel draw.
Oh.
And so I started in the chat. Oh, boy, it's rough when your gin card is somebody else's scotch card. So then we started this whole elaborate ranking of hands based on booze. And my favorite, Chris, ace 10, we decided was the Shirley Temple.
Yes, yes. Yes. You couldn't call it, like, you know, 2% milk or something, right? Whatever.
No, of course we can't call it milk, Chris. It's like we're talking about booze hands here.
Booze hands. Yeah, there's no booze in the Shirley Temple.
We'll give you a virgin Kahlua and cream. How's that? That's the best I could do.
Thank you.
To work in milk. But also at my table was Poker Geek MN. And, you know, I tell you, there's a lot of discussion at the table because people were like, you know, how many bananas do you have, Poker Geek MN? And then, of course, he's trying to remind them that he doesn't have as many as people think he does because he keeps finishing second.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, wake up this morning, and guess who finished second, Chris?
Let me see. You?
No, I had no chance of finishing second. At best, I could finish second twice, which would be 22nd. I don't think I did that. No, Poker Geek NN, MN, again, Chris, we're going to have to create a silver banana.
Jeez.
He's like the Ed McMahon of apes now. Always second fiddle.
The Susan Lucci of the Antiup Nation.
Well, we can't say that because he actually wins sometimes.
Hey, she won once. That's why,
yeah.
You know.
That's true. That's true. Well, you know, hey, but it was a great battle. And, of course, our winner was Scott C25. Goes by Snuffy on the forums. And it sounded like there was some gentlemanly stuff going on there at the end. And Poker Geek called in to kind of let us know what that was about.
Hi, this is Poker Geek MN. I wasn't going to call in, but because I didn't want to get accused again of liking the sound of my own voice, but I wanted to give mad props to the Antiup Nation. Both Scott McCord Poker and Scott C25 sat out when I got disconnected due to a computer crash free-handed, and let me come back in. I managed to scratch my way up to second place, and congratulations to Scott C25 for taking me down.
You see, Chris, that's why I like playing at the Antiup Nation. We're all nice folks.
Yep.
Now, of course, if somebody was from a South American country, probably wouldn't have been as nice. But you know, hey, that's good to know that we're playing with people that care that much about their fellow competitors and want to win the correct way.
Yep. Yep.
Well, you know, Snuffy also called in as well, too, and let's hear what our champion had to say.
Hey, it's Snuffy. Finally got a chance to ship the Nana tonight after a couple of seconds. It was cool. Congrats to Poker Geek for finishing second. He absolutely pwned me when we were three-handed, and I think I was all the way down to three big blinds before I got lucky enough to come back. Thanks for the event, and I'll see you in the TLC. Talk to you later.
Excellent. Good. Well, you know, hey, it was another good event. I'm glad we were able to remember to show up. And right now, I am going to announce when our next events are, which everybody already knows, but I'm going to write down our calendars here, Chris.
Yeah, carve it in stone.
So we don't miss it next time, because I don't want to do that. Next event is going to be Saturday, June 26th, noon Eastern, good old-fashioned No Limit Hold'em. And, of course, you have your shot to win one of those 10 free seats 1 week earlier, Saturday, June 19th, also at noon. Always on PokerStars, antiupmagazine.com/apes. That's A-I-P-S.
Well, Apes is one of our adventures, and we have many of them now, and we have another one If I'm sure everyone listening knows about the Antioch Poker Cruise, how much fun they've been. And we got another one coming up.
That's right. That's right. We're finally confirmed on the dates and everything. We don't yet have our website set up where we can take reservations. But go ahead and put it on your calendar next to all the Ape stuff. It will be October 25th to the 29th aboard the Royal Caribbean Monarch of the Seas. Be a four-night sailing out of Port Canaveral. That's near Orlando, for those of you Florida challenged. And we'll be making not one cruise, but two port stops. An all-day stop in Nassau, Bahamas, and then a half-day stop at Royal Caribbean's private island, I believe it's called Coco Cay. It kind of sounds like a cereal, doesn't it? Part of a complete breakfast at Coco Cay this morning. the best news, Chris, I think, for our podcast listening free people is that our cabins are going to start at $249 per person based on double occupancy. So what that means is $500, whether you're sailing by yourself or bringing your squeeze.
Right.
But that's almost the price of what one person was sailing on the last cruise, Chris.
Yeah, that's just incredible. Think about how many meals you're going to get. For $249, I could break the bank. I mean, really, the food bank.
Excellent. Well, you know, hey, look forward. We'll get that website set up very quickly. And then also new this time, I, Chris, am handling all the bookings this time.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting.
You know, because I've got plenty of spare time.
Yes, you have nothing better to do.
Sitting around twiddling my thumbs. But but yeah, we're working on a longer-term deal with Royal Caribbean. So that means we're going to transition into that. We will not be using our travel agent anymore. So folks will get the book directly with me. So don't bug our poor travel agent from last time. She doesn't need to be bugged. And get ready to bug me. And hopefully by next time, we'll announce on the show when the website is up and ready to go and when we're ready to accept the bookings. But put it on the calendar and start scraping together that $249 out of your bankroll.
And tune in next week. We'll teach Scott how to say Nassau.
Nassau. See, I can never say it. I will totally admit that I have no idea how to say it.
All right, let's see what's going on our Antioch News Desk.
A member of the Nevada Gaming Control Board, Chris, has said that Nevada casinos should stay clear of any involvement with .NET gaming sites that accept wagers from U.S. players. That comes from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. The member, Randall Sayers, said the line between .NET and .com sites operated by the same company has become blurred, and the agency will continue to probe current relationships.
That's nothing but bad news right there.
Yeah, that is not good at all. Now, I know folks are out there like, well, the .NET sites don't accept wagers. Well, yeah, and that's what the guy was saying. It's kind of blurred. They're kind of like, you know, the little technicality.
I mean, that's going to hurt so much.
Yeah, that is rough. You know, already, you know, it's tough to find any of the U.S. Available online sites anywhere at the World Series of Poker.
Yeah.
But this obviously means that you're not going to see them represented at any events in Las Vegas or Nevada for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is the NAPT.
Right, right.
Oh, my God, that's just terrible.
It's been tough to have that without PokerStars being part of it. So, you know, hey, that's our regulators and lawmakers at work yet again.
Well, speaking of that, Switzerland's highest court has banned poker tournaments outside of casinos, saying that the game is not one of skill, according to the Associated Press. What happened to them being neutral?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know what? I'm going to that's it. No more Swiss Miss for me. I'm drinking Nestle hot chocolate from now on.
All my Cuban sandwiches now are going to have American cheese.
Oh, you know, it's rough again. I mean, you win one, you lose one. It seems that way we're going. You know, some courts say, oh, it is a game of skill, and the next you turn around, oh, no, it's not. But at least it sounds like they've got, you can still play in casinos. This is a ruling that kind of would have opened up to, like, charity events and other things like that.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately. But in better news, poker pro Phil Locke has broken the world record for the longest game of poker played, lasting 115 hours, Chris.
Good God.
Locke, who was allowed only a 5-minute break each hour to eat, shower, or sleep. I guess he could have done all three, but that
was. How do you sleep in 5 minutes?
He banked a profit of $6,766 over the nearly 5-day session. Of course, before the record can be truly a world record, it has to be certified by Guinness, and that's going on now. And, you know, one of our longtime listeners, Tom Turley, called us both in the middle of the night, Chris.
I wanted to strangle him.
Fortunately, I turned my phone off so we didn't get woken up twice. But he secured Phil's cell number so we could call and bug him during this. But, you know what? I didn't want to be the guy that broke Phil's chance of breaking this record. You know, maybe because, you know, he'd be so engrossed in our conversation, Chris, you know, because that's just how we are, that he would probably talk to us for 6 minutes during the break, and it would have been nullified.
Could you imagine if we were the ones responsible for ending his his bit?
Oh, exactly. I didn't want to take that risk because I didn't want Jennifer Tilly to kick me. So, you know, Tom, we appreciate the wake-up call, you know, I went on, Phil, do this thing. And I'm happy to say that Andy F. did not screw it up.
You know, a couple of things. One, I think Guinness will certify it because, well, you know, Phil Locke's from Ireland, you know, and it seems like a natural thing to have Guinness be on his side. And now our hotline is from someone from Ireland as well. It's like an all-Irish show. Any of these people go to the school at Notre Dame, too?
Ooh, interesting.
This is Diana from Ireland. And she's having a little trouble with us.
Okay. If I reached the Auntie Up hotline number, hello, Chris and Scott. This is Diana in Ireland, Dingo, specifically. And I was just ringing to say that I love the podcast. And I went on the site to try to buy Auntie Up merchandise because if Chris is spending so long sanding chips, I know you must need the money. So, it took me ages to find a little tiny store at the very bottom of the page. And then I go on, and the poker people extra website that actually sells the merchandise, all they have is a t-shirt. And I say, great, I'll get a t-shirt. All right, there is no Ireland. When you have to choose a country, if you're not from the U.S., it has Iceland, it has Guam, it has everything, but there is no Ireland. There's Northern Ireland, which is a separate country, unfortunately, but there's no Ireland. Well, anyway, love the podcast. You guys are great.
Well, Diana, I feel terrible.
Yeah.
We're letting you down left and right here. Well, let me mention here, one, our Auntie Up store technically is not really up yet. You can go to Poker Depot and buy some stuff. And I'll follow up with the good folks at Poker Depot and find out why Ireland is not a country, because we all know it is. Right?
I think so. It's an island, right?
I think my travel agent can send me there. They can send me there. We can send a shirt there. So we'll try to figure that out. And then, of course, subscribing to the magazine, you know, I continue to feel bad about this. In the last couple of months, we've got probably half a dozen subscriptions from outside the U.S., even though the subscription place site clearly says U.S. orders only. So, you know, again, I feel bad for all of our folks. Our subscription house just can't handle international orders right now for subscriptions. And, you know, we used to be able to block that, so you didn't get into that whole problem of buying and then have to wait for me to refund your money. But, you know, we're doing some more other international business now that doesn't involve subscriptions.
Yeah.
So I had a list of blocks. So very, very, very sorry to Diana and everyone else outside the U.S. who's having trouble. We're trying not to be ugly Americans. We're working on all this stuff. But the best I can do now, Diana, is send you something for free. And it goes to the email. So I'm pretty sure the email reaches Ireland. And we'll be happy to send you a $10 staking package from getastake.com. I don't know what that equates to in euros.
Oh, man. All right, well, I know that Kenneth Cook probably didn't go to Notre Dame. He's from Washington State, so I'll read the mailbag. The big PPA rally is on Thursday. Oh, by the way, the hotline is 813-448-1120. I'm going to call that, leave a message for us, we'll use it, we'll give you something cool. I forgot about that. But he says the big PPA rally was on Thursday, and he wasn't really sure if a rally was the answer. Do we have an opinion on that? And he was also trying to figure out if playing free rolls on the big sites or the World Series qualifying events like on ESPN, he wants to know if those were considered illegal in Washington as well. And, of course, we mean Washington State. I'm not putting money on, but I suppose if I won something on Stars or Tilt for the main event, that money would be coming off. But like ESPN, is the broadcaster giving away a seat? So I would guess that there, you know, there were no transfers. Could we talk a little bit about that today? And I think you did a little looking into this, right?
Yeah, I actually and you know how little hair I already have, Chris?
Yeah.
I'm completely bald today.
You're pulling it out, huh?
Yeah, because I spent last night pulling – because I wanted to do right by our friend Kenneth, all right? You know,
yeah.
he's a frequent contributor, and, you know, I wanted to get to the bottom of this. So let's start with the first thing. The big rally he talked about, this mailbag came in a couple weeks ago, so the big rally, PPA rally, is over yet. And I don't know what you think about this, Chris, but, you know, I'm not a big burn-my-bra kind of Storm Washington kind of guy.
Right.
I understand that stuff can be effective, and certainly if PPA or other organizations want to do rallies, they do get media attention, so there's something good from that. I prefer a little more behind-the-scenes kind of direct kind of stuff, but, you know, whatever works, you know?
See, that's the thing, is I really don't know how much the people on Capitol Hill pay attention to what's going on outside, and whether or not they know all this stuff already and don't need to pay attention. You know, I mean, I remember the PPA had taken out an ad in like a well-read journal that was there,
right,
that we knew,
yeah,
the senators and we read or whatever, and that's kind of effective. But I don't know. I don't know if these rallies are effective or not. I've never actually been a part of one, because I'm like you. I'd rather just write the person directly or be in touch with someone I know is there directly and talk to them and have them, who I know they have the ear of these people. But you know, rallies can only help. They can't hurt, so...
Yeah,
you know,
as long as they're not crazy rallies.
Yeah, you're not doing anything stupid like...
Or where people are dressing up like, you know, poker chips and cages or something crazy like that. If you're respectful, then I think it probably does put the issue on the forefront, where somebody's talking about, like, well, what the heck are they protesting about today?
Yeah, right.
You know,
exactly.
So, you know, there you go. Now, to your bigger question, this is what pulled my hair out last night. I attempted to try the fan the answer to this, Chris. I went to... what a great website. I think it's gambling-law-us.com. Has all the laws for gambling in every state. And I read through the entire Washington section. And I was frustrated because I could not find anything about online gambling in there. Of course, everybody knows that online gambling is a Class C felony in Washington now, right?
Yeah.
So it should be there. So, you know, I read through the entire long thing three times, found out that, you know, fishing derbies are not gambling, even though they're gambling. The turkey shoots aren't gambling, even though they're gambling. That lots of other forms of gambling are legal in Washington, even though Washington doesn't think they're gambling. But, of course, online's not. But I could not find anything about online in there, right? So then I go to the PBA site. I'm like, maybe they have some kind of an explainer on their site. Search there, search their forums. I couldn't find anything that really explained this particular issue on PPA. So then I went back and I read the actual bill that was passed in 2006 myself. All right?
Wow.
I stopped four or five times to have a couple shots of scotch, because at this point I was just, you know, killing myself. And the funny thing about this, I have never read this before, Chris, but it really was changing two words in the existing law.
No way.
They had this law in the books, and I don't know how long it goes, about you can't transmit gaming information over the telephone, and they listed about 14 other ways that are all just in the Smithsonian now, not actually in real life. And they added internet to it.
Oh, my God.
That's all they did. So now here's my question, and I don't have an answer. What does transmitting gaming information mean, Chris?
Yeah, you got me there.
Because I wonder, based on that, in a layman's terms, and I'm not a lawyer or a lawmaker, but does that mean if you read Antiup magazine on our site that you are subject to a Class C felony? Because
yeah,
we're transmitting gaming information to them, are we not?
Yeah. That's bizarre.
So by that strict definition, I would say I would not play any free roll. I would not do anything in state. But I don't know. But, you know, then I read and went back to the laws, and they say as long as you're not wagering something of value, then it cannot be considered gaming. And I would say free rolls, you're not wagering or anything, right? Other than your time. Now, obviously, you win something of value, but it doesn't say that. It says wager something of value.
Yeah. Oh, man. this gets back to the whole free roll, did I cash or did I not cash when I won my seat?
Exactly.
Because it was a prize for an effort, you know.
Yeah, but that's, again, that's receiving something.
Yes.
Not wagering something.
That's
you
correct.
Didn't wager anything at all on that free roll.
That's right.
And neither would Kenneth if he gets on trying to win a WSOP seat. So, but, you know, so I guess it's a long way of saying, Kenneth, I'm sorry we failed you. And I don't know whether anybody else could not fail you on this, because I think it's just that complicated. So I guess I would say this. Oregon is beautiful. Montana, great, great country there. Idaho, awesome skiing. So you
Vancouver,
know.
Beautiful city.
Washington, I know, is a tremendous place to live. I've been there. I enjoy it. But you know what? Maybe you're just better off getting in the car and packing with the family. Like, come on, we're making one trip. Go someplace where playing poker is not akin to raping a children.
Yeah, or just go to the border and get an internet cafe and play there.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
That way you don't have to uproot the children and quit your job and, you know, just pay a couple of bucks for internet cafe access in Oregon.
All right, well, Kristen, this is the real stick in the eye for poor Kenneth here. You know, we taped our hand of the week in advance, so we're giving away that great uncut sheet of J Design cards and that. You know, so really, I had to choose between getting the $10 staking package from GetASteak.com, which I obviously can't use, or a free download of Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from Element26.net. Use code AU15 to save some cash. I don't know how much that's going to help them either. But I, you know, maybe it works on the free sites. So I mean, I would think you could play the free sites.
Man,
but again, I don't know.
That's what we get for doing something in advance. You know, I mean, you try to do right by everybody. You try to get Lee Childs do the hand of the week for you because he's going to be out in Vegas and he can't do it then. And you end up screwing Kenneth, man. This sucks, man. I feel bad.
Well, you know, and I feel a little less bad because Kenneth is a previous swag winner, but this was such a timely mailbag that I had to throw it in there.
Yeah.
And I went back to see what I sent him the last time, Chris. Yeah, it was a $10 staking package.
Oh,
geez. Good news, because that means that Kenneth does not hate us from that. And he's still eager to email us, even though we gave him the shaft before.
Well, I tell you, if he used that $10 staking package and then got sent to jail for it, then I would feel really bad.
Yeah, that would be very bad. But, Kenneth, hopefully you can find a use for the Poker Ham Breakdown Pro, and I know a lot of our listeners can, too. So check them out at element26.net.
You know, usually this part of the show, we're solving a mystery or trying to find out what a mystery is, but you know, our detective is like MIA. he was supposed to do one last week, and I guess the World Series was too strong. Called him out there. He's in Vegas doing something, and we don't have another woman mystery this week.
Hmm. That's all right. You know, hey, can't have everything every show.
Maybe he's on assignment. CSI yeah. Las Vegas. Maybe, who knows?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, maybe he's hanging out with not Emily Proctor because she's in Miami. David Caruso. I don't even know these shows, so I don't even know who's on the one in Las Vegas.
That's hilarious. You know, we're in the hotel room, and you're sleeping, and I'm watching TV, and that's on TV. And then you wake up, and you're like, oh, my God. Who watches this CSI Miami? I'm like, I didn't watch it. I was sending an email, and it was on TV when you fell asleep. Oh, my God, if I had to watch this for 15 minutes, I'd open up a vein and bleed to death in the hallway. I'm like, yeah, all right, I get it. You don't like, you know, cop shows or whatever. You're cracking me up.
Oh, it's not cop shows. That one just like over the top.
Yeah,
over the top.
I know.
And I'm a huge Bruckman. You know, anything that Jerry Bruckheimer does, man, I'm down with, but not this. All right.
Well, hopefully.
Every once in a while. We laid an egg with Pod Odds. Jerry Bruckheimer laid an egg with CSI Miami.
I love that every time you look at David Caruso, he puts his sunglasses on or takes them off, then they go to commercial. That's the entire show is based on when he takes his sunglasses off and when he puts them on. Well, hopefully our good detective will return next week with a fresh new mystery, perhaps a World Series mystery. Who knows?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that PokerStars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our PokerStars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Scott, you know, I have heard you talk about Tunica over the years, and I never actually had a chance to go there, but I am so glad that we went.
Yeah, we had a great time, didn't we?
Yeah, really enjoyed myself there. I mean, you know, it's not cool to get away from the family all the time. We got a business, we got things we got to do, and it was such a pleasant trip. Everybody there. I mean, Southern hospitality. You look it up in the dictionary, and there's a map of Tunica.
Yeah.
It's just everyone is so nice. The place was great. The places were clean. Really enjoyed myself, man. And you know, we went up there for a road trip for our magazine to write reviews of all the rooms, and I wasn't disappointed at all.
Yeah, we had a good time, and our astute listeners probably remember that Faso and I did a Tunica trip several years ago. Might even be before the podcast. And I remember there coming back, and my quote was, "Nothing there but cotton fields, churches, and casinos."
And that's the lead to my story.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but yeah, it's not a hotbed of entertainment, but a lot of good poker there. And as you said, nice people. Great comps. We got all kinds of stuff to tell people about today,
yeah.
In case they're interested in going to Tunica.
You know, and a lot of stuff to learn too. Like I guess you had mentioned, and we kind of almost suffered for this. Was you know when the last time you were there, there was this overall shuttle that you could pay like
yes.
a buck and it would take
yes.
you everywhere. So we didn't rent a car. We thought, hey, we're gonna go there and take this shuttle and go to all the rooms and save some money. And then we found out, yeah, there's no shuttle. I mean, there was one between the Harris properties. The Horseshoe and the Harris, so you could see Gold Strike. You know, if you're going to play poker, you can see the Gold Strike and Horseshoe on one stop, and then you can go back to Harris for the other. But if you wanted to go like Samstown or Hollywood, you're out of luck.
Yeah, it's a long walk too. So,
yeah, that's a pretty far ride.
But that's really about all that's changed in Tunica, Chris. And since Fast and I went up there, but good poker, and you know, I think we should start it off by talking about the Horseshoe.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, we hit a couple rooms, and then we walked into the Horseshoe, and you whispered to me, like, wow, look at all the tables going. They must have a tournament going on. We get up there. Guess what? There wasn't a tournament going on. They actually had a lot of cash games.
And that was, you know, that was because the first room we saw had, like, one or two tables going. Right. And we thought, well, they're all going to be like that. So when we walked into the Horseshoe and we saw, like, 8 tables, we were like, oh, there's got to be, like, like 2 cash games going in a table, small tournament or something. And no, man, they were spreading everything. It was like there was the only stud game in town, and it was at the Horseshoe. The only stud game in Mississippi, and it was at the Horseshoe.
The only stud games in the United States.
it was a 1-5 spread game, which is fine. That's what we like to play. It wasn't a big stud game, but I'm sure they'd get one going too if they wanted to, because whatever they wanted to do seemed to work for the Horseshoe. The Horseshoe is the epicenter of poker in Tunica.
Absolutely. Now, Samstown is where Faxon and I held court last time we went up, and they had great comps, which they still do. But I was happy to see that it's completely renovated since last time there. No more smoking.
Right.
That was a big thing. We had to suffer through the smoking last time. That's gone. And, Chris, they're getting ready to renovate again. So, you know, they're really putting a lot of money into that property, and it was a very nice room. And
yes.
It could be a good place to play.
Yep, they're going to move some of the counters to more convenient areas, and they're going to get new carpet, and they're going to tighten up the room a little bit and try to make it quieter, too, try to wall off the sounds of the slots and everything, and it's going to be nice. You know that they know what they're doing up there. Real good staff and good people at Samstown.
Absolutely. And also fresh off renovations was Harrah's, where we stayed, and that massive southern plantation of 4 hotels. You had to get on the shuttle to get from your hotel to the casino. That's how big this place is.
Yeah, you did not want to walk from the casino to your hotel, believe me.
But they just finished renovating the poker room there at Harris, too, and you can't take 4 little baby steps without running into some kind of World Series poker branding there. It's all over the felts, and, you know,
the
nice
chairs.
Pictures of all the champions
yeah.
and the chairs and stuff. So and new lighting, and it was a very pleasant room too, and it was off to the side too, so you didn't get a lot of that slot machine noise there either.
Yep, it was a little more quiet, and that's host to one of the Tunica circuit event there too, and right. You know, they also have a nice facility down the way, the convention center, where they host the big stuff, and they add more tables to this room, so you can definitely see that this room is prepared for big events too. It was a lot of fun. They had a lot of promotions too. Made the night fun.
Absolutely. And the Gold Strike also is the one that hosts the other big tournament every year in the area. And their room, Chris, I thought was what I would call probably the most private room.
Absolutely.
Tunica. It was up on the second floor. There's still a few slot machines around there, but not very noisy. Still got some of the noise from downstairs, but it really was more kind of secluded. So if you're looking for that quiet poker experience, definitely Gold Strike is probably where I would go.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you go up a huge escalator, and then you got to do like a U-turn off the escalator to get to the room. So you can tell, like, even when you're walking into the main room, there's a sign pointing that poker room is upstairs, and that's all it says. It doesn't say, like, slots are up there, and that probably keeps a lot of the general public away. But which also can be a curse, I think, for the casino and for the poker room, because poker room's not going to get the general tourists looking at it and saying, hey, I played poker at the kitchen table with my dad once. Maybe I should go sit down and play. And, you know, they don't get that walk-by traffic, but it's still a nice room.
Because I tell you, we every time we walked in one of these casinos, I mean, we were like Abbott and Costello trying to find the poker room.
Yeah.
All the signs and pointing like every which way but where we could go. And we're trying to find a poker room. So I can only imagine people that just walk in and, stumble into a poker room, particularly when it's nowhere around to be found. So.
And the last room was Hollywood Casino, and that was, it's right across from Sam's Town. And it was the smallest room, but it had the coolest, decor, and there's some pretty funny stories attached to it, too. You know, because it's Hollywood, so they have Hollywood themes throughout the entire thing. And this was located in the Adventure Slots area, a.k.a. Indiana Jones and the Final Crusade or whatever, you know. It's pretty cool, like rocks on the walls and hieroglyphics on the columns, and it was kind of dark, because of that. But at the same time, it was definitely a quiet area.
Yeah. It's Fasten and I spent a lot of time playing in that room last time. It really hasn't changed much from there either. So I kind of remembered some stories of playing with some fun folks there next to the rocks. And the manager there talked about how they have changed some stuff. I guess there used to be like a little train, kind of like cart kind of thing.
Yeah, like a track.
It came out on tracks, and they used to have slot machines there, and they used to drop like these coins.
That weren't worth anything.
Yeah, like souvenir coins that you can't put them in any kind of slot machine or anything. People were used to, beat each other up trying to get these, and so that's not there anymore. And they had some kind of light show or
water
volcano.
Water came down the walls and stuff, yeah. That's all gone.
That kind of would have been fun. And I think he's right. It's like everybody came and saw it for the first 15 minutes or first 3 or 4 days and thought it was cool. And then after that, they get annoyed by it.
People coming out of the dog pile with scratches on their arms and black eyes. And that's the lawsuit waiting to happen right there. So it's understandable why they got rid of it, but I would have loved to have seen it just once.
Well, a lot of interesting, unique things in poker there, too. And every trip we take, we find some kind of, at least things that we call regional differences. They may not be, but stuff that we haven't seen or is a little more prevalent in that area than in other areas we went.
Right.
And the games of choice did seem kind of like the Mississippi games, I call them. Yeah. You know, like 1-3, 1-2, no limit, and 4-8 limit.
Right.
Really are the games. You know, most of them had one of them going and the other going. That was about it. Though, you know, we mentioned Horseshoe had that 1-5 stud. They also had 48 Omaha. Which cost me some money. Thank you. And they do get big limit games going on weekends. I know on Thursday they do a 15-30 limit hold'em when we're there, and then they say 20-40 on the weekends, and people actually drive and fly in to play that game. So bigger games on the weekend. It's definitely a weekend crowd there in Tunica, right?
Yeah, as they were telling us, too, that the rooms that they reserve in their hotels are all taken up by the 20-40 guys. You know, so you can't even get in there on the weekend to get a room, you know, comped or whatever, reserved, whatever, for that rate. But, the weekend games are the big games. And unfortunately, we weren't actually there on the weekend, right?
It was we were there doing slow trickle time.
But it was still fun nonetheless. And like I said, at night, you know, Horseshoe was hopping. Gold Strike was going, had a tournament going. And, so these rooms at night got going. But, in the weekend, I would have liked to have seen it on the weekend, too. I wish I was there for that.
Well, I'll tell you, the other great thing about going to Tunica, Chris, are the comps.
Yes.
You know, here in Florida, obviously, we don't have casinos yet, so, you know, some rooms are boasting 25 cents an hour or stuff that's almost laughable to other folks.
Yeah.
Generally, I think most rooms in Vegas, you know, you might get $1 an hour or something, but the Hollywood, Chris, $3 an hour.
That's just incredible.
Poker comps. Sam's Town, it's $2.50 an hour, but they also give you clothing, too,
yes,
depending on how many hours you play, so it's probably effectively $3 or more. And then we also learned from one of the managers at Harrah's that the Harrah's Total Rewards card, which, of course, they own 97% of casinos and poker rooms in the world, they used to, you know, your poker would be separate from your total rewards points. And a lot of properties, they would be property-specific, too. So, you know, your poker that you'd the comps you would earn in Vegas wouldn't transfer out to Tunica.
Right.
But he told us that total rewards has changed now, and when you play poker in the rooms, they convert them into some kind of total rewards point. I'm sure you get screwed on the deal. Sure, it's not as good as playing slots or anything like that. But, you know, at least now you're adding the total rewards card. So I think that's a pretty big development.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to know that when I went to the Horseshoe, I could pick out that card and put it on there, and then when I went back to Harrah's, I was still building comps regardless of where I was playing, so that was great.
Right. And the Horseshoe, too, they said, you know, hey, yeah, we'll rate you, we'll get you points, too, but just ask for buffet.
Yep.
If you get hungry, we'll give you food.
Yeah, they'll pay you.
Wow, you're going to like that, right?
Yeah, you got to love hearing that.
And, of course, certainly there's not a lot to do in Tunica, so they depend on bringing people in.
Right.
They have games going, so I was amazed at some of the great hotel rates that some of the poker room managers were telling us about. If you call the poker room ahead of your trip and ask for the poker rate, they'll set you up, and it's pretty cheap.
Yeah, like a couple of them, like $35 during the week. I mean, that's just incredible.
Right.
And, of course, you and I ate for free the entire weekend.
Yes, we played the comp system to a hilt.
Did not pay for a meal again. It's a third straight or second straight trip where we didn't pay for a meal. Incredible.
Oh, and we had some good meals, too. We'll talk about some of those later on. But, you know, we had some interesting things happen at the table, too. And I was playing in a 4-8, I believe it was a 4-8 limit game. We were trying to get it going.
Right.
They had three or four games going, and then they had a long list, so they created another one. Of course, whenever you have a long list, half of those people aren't even around anymore.
Yep.
By the time they call it, it was short, right? So we got down, and we only had five people playing. And they took a poll. I mean, who wants to play five-handed? And I'm like, I don't care. I'll play heads up if I have to. But, of course, you know, you got some of these older folks that don't like to play shorthanded. So what they decided to do to keep the game going was go with one single small blind, Chris.
Hey, that's really weird.
It is, but it did make a lot of sense because it doesn't disrupt the normal flow of the game. You know, if somebody had just paid the $4 big blind, and the blinds are 2-4 in this game, then you could immediately go to the single small blind, and you know the button moves correctly.
Huh.
You just don't have to pay the big blind, and that's a way to keep the less money going in that you have to put in. And I think the bigger reason we had some guys getting upset because we were chopping the blinds when it got short.
Yeah,
and you know it's a difficult situation. I think even in our home game we talk about it. When it gets short, we call off the chop agreements that we have.
Right.
Because, you know, you're just shuffling at that point.
Yep.
But, you know, when you're an outsider like I was in a new room, I don't want to call off those agreements. So I was still chopping. And I think everybody else was trying to be nice, too, in chopping. And, of course, we were just, you know, the poor dealer was the only one working. So doing the single blind, you can't chop. You know, I guess you could fold the small blind.
Right.
Let him take his money back. But, you know, it cuts down the chop. So I thought that was something that was a little different and kept the game going. And then when we got back up to sixth, then we just threw the big blind back in there.
And it's something we learn new every time we go on these trips. You know, last time it was the overs button, and now it's a single small blind, which is a real unique way to solve a problem. And we might even consider it in our game, you know. What else happened? Oh, you know, I actually won some money. I won all my Biloxi money back, which felt really good and a little more. That was nice.
It's always infinitely more enjoyable traveling with Chris Kissenza when he's winning.
Yeah.
And when I say infinitely... I'm talking to the little Google sign.
Yeah, I mean, I could still find something to complain about even if I'm winning, but it was nice to win some money and to make, you know, it just feels so much better, and to get the other money back, you know, felt good because that money I lost was all bad beats, so that's what made me nauseous about it. But it was great.
True.
It was
that's
nice.
True. And for those folks that live near the Tunica area, and we know we have a couple because they emailed us when they found out we were in town, we just weren't able to catch up with any of them. But those folks will be happy to know that the Tunica poker economy is not poor because of our visit. Because everything you won, I lost. So the money's still there, folks.
We're almost always a wash wherever we go. I don't think we've ever came back and said, man, we both won, or, oh, man, we both suck, you know? It's always like a wash.
I think we always come back talking about how much we suck. Just,
yeah, no.
Just got lucky that trip.
Hey, you know what was weird was at my table, they had this guy who got up and left his seat for a long time. Another guy wanted to play real bad, and they came and brought over this, like, glass block.
Yeah.
They covered their chips and then let the guy sit there and play on top of the glass block until the other guy returned. I had never seen that before.
You know, I think I've heard about it, but I hadn't seen it either, and it was pretty prevalent at my table. In fact, one guy just kept moving around from seat to seat. As people came back, he'd just pick up his little block and his chips and move to another absent seat and sit there until eventually his seat got called, and he actually became a real member of the game. But, you know, I guess it's kind of cool. I mean, it keeps more money in the game, and, you know, particularly if you're in an area, and I get the sense that Tunica is like this, where they don't like to play shorthanded there.
Yeah,
so the games can break pretty easily. So by letting people come in and put this, you know, block down so the chips are protected, you're keeping the games going. So I guess I don't really have a problem with it. It was just kind of weird, you know?
Yeah, it was kind of strange. It was just, like, so obtrusive. But, you know, it seems so inconvenient, too. You got to be really desperate to want to play if you got to play on top of a block and move around, you know. It was just like, wait a couple more minutes, you know. It was just kind of weird. But,
hey, that Omaha list took forever, so it was more than a couple minutes, man.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, those are the kind of characters. We met a lot of characters on this trip. One night, I was about even, and you were exhausted. And I said, you know what, Scott, I want to play, so I'm going to go back. We went back to Harrah's, and I took the shuttle over to the casino, and you went to bed. And there was two tables going. And, you know, it seems like every room I went to, I was always on a must-move table, it seemed like, but that doesn't matter. So I sat down with this guy, and, you know, he saw the shirt, and he's like, hey, what do you do for those guys? And I said, I'm one of the publishers. I'm one of the owners. My partners and I are up on a trip. And he's like, oh, really? I said, yeah, do you read the magazine? He goes, oh, yeah, I steal it every month from the poker room. I said, you do know they're free, right? He goes, huh? I was like, yeah, they're free. Just take it with you, man. He's like, oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah. Well, I take it every month, you know.
That's great. I kind of had this vision of John Belushi in Animal House. The guy all dresses up in all black and dances around and waits for somebody not to look and then shoves it in his front of his pants and then runs out. Folks, Andy Up's free. All you that live in the 12 southern states, walk into any room or league, take it. Somebody charges you for it, call us.
Hey, you know what? It's on me. You know, it's on me. Just
compliments of Scott and Chris.
Yeah, let them know that Scott and I are picking this one up for you. We got this round. You know, the funny thing is that the next day, you and I had to go back there to interview the poker room manager for the magazine, and the guy was still there. I said, what? Don't you go to bed? And everybody came up to me, and they're like, yeah, that guy plays all the time. He's been here 20 hours right now. He was there 20 hours.
See, I could do that probably in limit. I mean, I would really have to stretch to do it. I'm no Phil Locke. But no limit. Boy, I got to think, playing that long and no limit, you're bound to make a mistake that's costly, don't you?
Oh, you would think. And I actually, the first hand I sat down, the first hand, he was on my left, and he had straddled, and I was in the big blind. He straddled for, I think it was six, because it was 1-3. And I looked down at ace, eight of clubs. So I limped, and then he goes, it's just me and you? And I don't know who he is. He doesn't know who I am. I said, yeah, let's make it 10 more. I said, all right, I called. And I flopped three clubs, and he didn't believe me. And I took a huge pot off him. I took like an $80 pot off him. And not $80 pot, but $80 from him on the first hand. Then later on, when I must move, I moved his table again. I took another like 60 off him. I saw him get felted a few times. So I don't know if he just kept putting money out or whatever. But yeah, when you're playing No Limit Hold'em for 20 hours and I felted you twice, you're not very good.
but you had some fun with straddles, right?
Yeah, I ran into a lot of weird people on this trip. I don't mean to be hogging the whole show, but...
No, but yeah, you definitely you attracted the circus crowd.
there was this one guy on my left at the Gold Strike. Every time it was going to be his big blind, he would leave.
Okay.
I hate people like that
because normally they're like, you know, and especially I hate it when they're on my right because then it always puts me in the big blind when I don't want to. I always feel like it messes with the, you know, whatever. So, but no, he was on my left and his big blind, every time he came around, he'd get up and he'd leave. And I was like, all right, well, there's got to be some strategy. Well, here's his strategy. He would come back and instead of just putting his money in for the big and the small, he would straddle.
Excellent.
So he would pay like even more money.
Pay double, but play only one blind hand.
And play one blind hand. And it was like, huh? Is that working for you, buddy? Because it didn't seem like it was working for him. He just kept putting in more money, and then somebody inevitably would punish the straddler, and he'd have to fold. You know?
I was going to ask you, was he one of these crazy straddlers that raised with anything?
Yeah. I think he tried it once, got called, and then had to fold a flop. But most of the time, someone would raise him pre-flop, and he would have to fold.
That's crazy. I mean, worse is the guy that leaves him a small blind. Oh, I hate that.
Oh, I know.
Like, come on, just play one more hand, buddy. You can hold it. You can hold it a little bit longer.
Little Doyle's room will still be there after you pay your small blind.
Because when you skip the small blind, it messes everything up.
Yep. Now, is there a reason for this? What strategy do you think this guy is getting by doing this? By putting more money in as a straddler, too?
I think one of the fascinating old trips we ran into somebody who was playing a really big game well beyond his bankroll, and they were talking about how there were folks at the table doing that. And no one really, it sounded like, had the bankroll to play this game. So everybody was getting up during their big blinds to come in and put all their money once. Now, of course, the people weren't stupid enough to straddle with that. But I guess that's the strategy, because if you're not disciplined enough to fold your small blind, you're better off just having one hand where you're forced to put money in rather than two.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of. But.
And then if he wasn't a real aggressive guy, he'll like to raise his straddle, then he would never pay a blind because he almost always would get his money back when he made it 25 to go or whatever. But he just didn't – I don't know. He just didn't seem to like grasp whatever strategy he had set out for himself or something. It was really weird. But then, you know, I went over to the horseshoe after that, and they had this guy. He was a little disheveled, you know.
Disheveled.
Yeah, his shirt wasn't tucked. He had like dirt under his fingernails. You know, he had a bulbous red nose. You know, and I know what you're thinking, Carl Malden, but it wasn't him. So every time a dealer sat down, they would say, "Sir, do you have your player's card?" And he'd go, "Oh yeah, here." And he'd reach into his shirt pocket and he'd pull out his hotel key. And he would throw the hotel key over to the guy, and the dealer would go, no, sir, this is your hotel key. Do you have your player's card? Oh, that is my player's. No, this is your hotel key. Oh, what's a player's card? Right? So I was like, oh, my God. Can we just deal, please? You know? So they deal the hand. Dealer inevitably would leave. The guy's still at the table. Another dealer would come in. Sir, do you have your player's card? Hang on. And he'd pull out his hotel key. He did this 4 times. Can you imagine living through that 4 times? And at the end, we're all just like, he doesn't have one. He doesn't have one. Don't ask him. And then he would still throw the freaking hotel key out. And we're like, dude, that's your hotel key. Go get the player's card. Have somebody get it for you. I don't have one. Well, then stop giving him the hotel key. You know, every time they do, and because that's their job, is to make sure that everyone's punched in so they're getting the proper, you know, they have to ask. And it got to be where the dealer came over, like, don't ask seat 6 if he's got his player card because he didn't have it. You know, it's crazy.
Well, we got to sign an autograph this trip too, Chris.
Yeah, that's always so strange, you know.
It is kind of strange. But you know, always appreciative.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that they recognize us. You know, some people just thumb through it real fast and don't care. And this guy left his tournament seat and ran up to us and like was almost like shaking when he was holding the magazine. He's like, "Could you guys sign this for me?" And I was like, "Well, my partner just went to the restroom, but I'll sign. You know, I'll tell him to get you when he gets back." You know, and he told us where he wanted us to sign it and everything. It's pretty wild. I mean, I don't know. It's not worth anything. you know,
I wonder, and I'm not making fun of these people because I appreciate it, but, you know, I wonder what their autograph collection at home looks like.
He's like you Joe know? The Garbage Man.
Well, yeah. I mean, where do we rank, you know? I mean, are we like the 10,098th autograph in the collection?
Look,
just an autograph whore, you know, just has everybody sign it? Or are we actually really celebrities in his mind?
Well, I think we're just below, like, Bubbles the Chimp's paw print that he has.
Okay, but just ahead of Carl Malden.
But just ahead of Carl Malden. You know, I think that's where we fit in. But, hey, I was honored. I mean, I've had people ask me before. I had security guards, you know, at casinos when they recognize because they read the magazine because what else are they going to do, you know?
Yeah.
I've had those guys come up to me and say, hey, can you sign this? So, I mean, I've signed a few. It's fine. I mean, you know, the funny thing is if we ever do become rich and famous someday and like, it actually becomes worthy, these people are going to have a really hard time having it authenticated because you and I, we sign our names like so different every time we sign. They're never the same. Oh, that's a real Cassandra signature. I don't think it is.
Oh, man. Well, you know, this guy also asked one of our advertisers, Kenny Peel, to autograph his ad. And folks that read our magazine know that Kenny Peel is the creator of Bad Hat Poker. Wears his signature hat around. And, you know, he gave us one. It was really nice. Very comfy.
I love the hat, by the way. Yeah. And I'm not just saying that because he advertises or because he actually let us use his car for the whole time we were there.
Yeah,
I like the hat.
I tell you, I felt really bad because, you know, I was like the de facto Tunica expert, which I don't really know how I became that other than the fact that I was the only one that two of us has been there. And because of how expensive it is to get to Tunica from here, we ended up taking a junket. That, you know, and they pile you on a bus and drop you off at the hotel and then put you back on the bus and drop you off at the airport. I mean, you really don't have to think about anything, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, of course, they want you just to stay at the hotel. So there's no car involved. And I'm like, you know, Chris, don't worry about it. Last time I was there, there's some kind of shuttle that gets us around. And as you mentioned at the top of the show, we got there and found out, no, gone. No shuttle. So here we are on a business trip. We have to get to all five casinos, and we have no way to get to two of them. So we're telling our good friend Kenny this, we're meeting him, and he's like, you know what? I don't have anywhere to be today. Why don't you just take my Jeep?
That was unreal. I was like, what?
No, come on, Kenny,
Are you kidding me?
And he's like, no, seriously. I'll have my wife come over and pick me up, and I'm not doing anything. And tomorrow I'm just going to hang out with her. You just keep it for the weekend. We're like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, sure, no big deal. So here we are, the two nights we were there, driving around in one of our advertisers' Jeep. It was awesome.
I got to tell you, if Dr. Frank wants to try to keep his Anti-Up National lead going, he's going to have to let us use the Mercedes. Because this was pretty big right here, man. This moved this guy way up, man. Kenny's the man right now.
Well, I tell you, it's all part of that whole Southern hospitality you talked about, too.
Yeah.
You're never going to meet – if you meet anybody in Tunica, and I would say any Mississippi anywhere,
yeah,
that is rude, they are absolutely – not from there.
That's right. That is absolutely right.
I just don't think that anybody's from there knows how to be rude or not nice.
If you ran into anybody there that was rude, it was me and Scott on a trip. It was us. Anybody else, they were just so nice, man. It was great.
But definitely, if you want to reward Kenny Peel, buy one of his great bad hats at badhatpoker.com. And we might have him on the show here in a couple of weeks, Chris, because he wrote a great book called Funny Things, something like Funny Things That I've Heard at the Poker Table.
Yeah.
It's a collection of all these funny stories, and he had us in stitches telling us about some of them. So maybe we'll have him on the show to kind of regale our troops.
And for our male listeners, the wives loved the hat, by the way. So
yes, that is true.
You know, if you're afraid that you're going to buy this hat and someone's going to give you guff, well, let me tell you, my wife and Scott's wife both love the hat on us. So, and I'm not. This isn't like a paid thing, man. This is absolutely 100% true. I mean,
and
they love the hat.
Hats. I know. They see me with a hat.
So we're not shilling it. Believe me, it's true. They love the hat, and we like the hat too. It's real comfortable. But we had a lot of funny stories too, as well. That happened.
Oh, yeah, you can't travel any of the time without having some bringing the funny home.
I think this happened to you too, right?
The elevator. Yeah, it happened to me first because the first night, I was dead tired for whatever reason. I was sick and everything, and I went back to the room by myself. We hadn't even checked in, I don't think.
Right.
At that point, because the way this junket works is they just take your luggage and they put it in the room for you.
Yep.
They give you your keys at the airport. So I had no idea where my room was, right? And so I get off the shuttle. I'm tired and bleary-eyed and sick. I get in the I'm reading, and our room was like 26018.
I know. That's exactly what it was.
And you get in, and I'm trying to figure out. He's got arrows pointing everywhere. It's like the schematic for the Manhattan Project. To try to find out where our room was. So I figure out where I think I'm going. Get into the elevator. It opens, closes. I push, and all it has is 1 through 6.
Right.
It doesn't have 26. So by deductive reasoning, because every once in a while I've got a smart idea, I'm like, all right, maybe it must be the 6th floor, right?
Right.
I push the 6th button, nothing lights up. So I push like five, nothing lights up. Four, three, nothing's lighting up. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm so tired. So I'm like, you know what? They get a little slot there for your card, which normally most places do this if you're like on the penthouse level.
Yeah.
You know, when you're the high rollers and they don't want the riffraff like me sneaking up there. I'm like, you know what? Maybe that's what I need to do. I slot my hotel room key in there, push sticks, and boom, off to the races. And the next morning, you come home, and I mean, come home that night. The next morning, we wake up and we start talking, and you tell me the same story.
Here I am rolling in at 3 in the morning because I was gambling. You know, I was playing poker pretty late. I was exhausted. And so I walk in. There's nobody there. I'm the only person alive and awake in this hotel. I go over to the hotel. I do the exact same thing you do, trying to figure out where the hell I actually am. Get in the elevator, and I'm like, all right, it's broken. Please, 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 God, when I hit the open door button, open this door. Open button, the door opens. I'm like, all right, let me go see this another. There's no other elevator. It's the only elevator there. Usually there's two next to each other, you know. I'm like, all right, let me try it again. I get back in there, hit 6, no. Hit 5, 4, 3, no, nothing. What the hell? I get out. I'm like, still nobody around. I get in the elevator. I look, and I see the slot that you're talking about, but right below it, there's like this, you know, if it says, oh, firefighters needing to emergency using it, and I'm like, oh, okay, so this is for firefighters to use this thing, whatever it is. I had no idea that my card was going to control this thing. I thought it was for firemen, you know? Like, I'm like, all right, so I get back out. I look around, and then finally there's a guy there buffing the wood floors with the – and I'm like, thank God. He looks at me, and he goes, use your card. I didn't even ask him. I didn't even say anything like, hey, this bro. He goes, you got to use your card. I was like, oh, my God. So I go in there and I use my card and I go up. So it was hilarious. You
know, the other interesting thing about this trip was that it was the U.S. Open when we were in town, Chris. And much to our surprise, it was not tennis or golf or bowling for that matter. It was sporting clays.
Yep, skeet shooting.
Over at the Willow Sporting Clay Center, people were out there with shotguns, blowing little clay pigeons out of the air. So it sounded like the 4th of July the entire time we're there. A little pop, 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 pop. And that was pretty cool. So, but, you know, we go back to the hotel together, and we get in the hotel, and we follow a guy in, and he's carrying two shotguns with him. Gets in the elevator, and, you know, I'm a nice guy. I like to make conversations, especially in the South. You know, I'm trying to be nice because I know people are going to talk back to me, right?
Yep.
Well, hey, how'd you do today? Oh, man, there are a lot of squirrely targets out there. I shot an 81 in the prelims. It's like, have you guys shot yet today? I'm like, oh, no. We haven't shot yet.
I was like, that just depends on what you mean.
How can anybody look at us, Chris?
I know.
In our goofy Annie Ebb shirts and think that we're skeet shooters.
Yeah, I wanted to say, oh, yeah, man, I bagged 100 the first time around. Just really ticked the guy off, you know? But I'm like, wait a minute. This guy has two guns with him. I don't want to piss him off.
You know, and I didn't even know what an 81 in the prelims was. He sounded pretty disappointed, so.
It sounded good to me.
I didn't want to go, nice job. Yeah. And find out that, you know, 81's like the 200 on the SAT, you know?
Well, it sounded good. 81 sounded good. I actually said good job to the guy. I just, whatever it was to get him to not aim his pistol at me or whatever that thing, that shotgun was, whatever. But, you know, it's funny you brought that up, too, because on my drive back from Harris to the hotel, I picked up the shuttle. It's 2:30 in the morning. The driver's all by himself. He's a lonely guy, you know. So I get on the thing, and he turns to me, and he goes, hey, man, I'm addicted to that skeet shooting. And I said, oh, really? Yeah. I said, yeah, the U.S. Open in town. He goes, yeah. He goes, oh, man. He goes, you know, I'm real familiar with using handguns. At this point, I clutch my, you know, wallet, you know. And he's like, but those shotguns, man, those shotguns, those are tough. Those are tough to use. But I'm addicted to it, man. I am just addicted. It's like crack for recreation. And I said, yeah. Yes, it is, sir. It absolutely is. You can bet when that shuttle stopped in front of the hotel, I tipped this man. I gave him like $3. I was like, dude, thanks for the entertaining ride over. He's like, yep, see, you had the skeet shooting, so he must have thought that I was a shooter.
Yeah, you know? I guess we have that kind of. I guess maybe it was like the Elmer Fudd hat that we were wearing all week when we weren't wearing the Bad Hat hat.
Well, of course, when you got on the shuttle and you said, be very, very quiet, that didn't help any.
Well, you know, we had a lot of great meals, and, you know, we're over at Sam's Town, and the table games guy there is like, you know, hey, you got to check out Twain's. His name, you know, they're a little fancy restaurant named after Mark Twain.
Right.
He's like, they got a great early bird special, $25. You can get a steak. Come back. I'll join you. So I'm like, all right, fine. So we come back, had a great meal, and, you know, it's like a three-course thing or whatever. You know, you get an salad and dinner and then dessert. And we, you and I were both looking at each other during dessert like, this ain't going down. This is just too much food. And I'm forcing my way through it. I'm like slogging. I'm like, ugh. Get halfway through my chocolate pecan pie. I'm like, all right, wave the white flag. Waitress comes over. What'd she bring us, Chris?
She brought us two chocolate dipped strawberries that were the size of a baby's head.
Absolutely the biggest strawberries I've seen. And I do a lot of traveling with Mike Faso, who, you know, is the strawberry jubilist expert. He gets that drink every casino he wants, and they always put a little banana strawberry on it, and he's always comparing it in relative size to baby head. This baby one head. Wasn't a baby head. These strawberries were toddler heads.
Toddler heads dipped in chocolate.
Yeah, and those fat toddlers, you know, those ones that aren't ever going to grow out of their baby fat. That was the size of these strawberries. And we looked at each other, and I'm like, I'm not wasting a good strawberry.
Yeah, you know, I thought to myself, we didn't even need dessert. This is dessert.
Absolutely. I just kind of pushed that stomach around a little bit, you know, tried to move some stuff around.
You did that Kobayashi wiggle.
Yeah, yeah, right? Clear a little space, because I'm like, hey, buddy, strawberry's coming down there.
Look out below. Yeah, it was really good. The food was fantastic. And, you know, I mean, it was like a $100 meal, and they comped it. It was incredible.
Very nice.
And, you know, we're leaving there. We're pulling out of the parking lot, and across the street, a cotton field is out there. And now all the cotton fields out there are really, they're in their infant stages right now or whatever. We saw easily 25 deer out there eating leaves and stuff. I mean, you don't see that in Vegas.
Well, and what I thought was very interesting, too, was it was the U.S. Open skeet shooting.
I know.
I guess these deer, the word got out. You know, they're all checking their Facebook pages and like, dude, all the guys with guns are shooting clay pigeons this week. So have at it. No one's going to be gunning for you. Chow down.
Oh, that's great, man. That is great.
I'm sure that's what happened because you were amazed.
I was.
City slickers, and there's just like these deer just hanging out there.
I remember one time coming home from a home game at our friend Kyle's. And I saw three deer, like, by a lake, and I had to call them up, like, as I'm driving home from the home game at midnight. And I'm like, dude, I just saw three deer, and I was just shocked by it. This was 25 deer if there were one. And it was incredible. And they're all just snacking, chowing down, doing whatever it is they do in fields. It was incredible. Couldn't believe it.
Well, you know, all good trips have to come to an end. And so, you know, they got this junket thing down pat there, Chris.
Yeah, they do.
And, you know, you got to be on the bus at 3:45, flight leaves at 6. So we got there at, like, 3:40. They're like, all aboard the last bus. I'm like, whoa!
The last bus!
We barely got there in time to get on the bus. And we get there to the airport, and it's one line, Chris.
And we're the only ones in town.
You get in line, you walk through it, you check in, you get your boarding pass, you just keep moving, and you go right through the security line. And they got, like, this little holding tank, I call it, where they have just enough chairs for everybody that fits on the jet that's leaving. And it really did feel like I was checking in at Ellis Island.
It was a lot like that.
It was, and then, of course, you're there, like, 30 hours early. And we're starving, and all they had was a vending machine and a gumball machine and a Coke machine.
And none of the prices were right, either. You'd put in a dollar expecting 30 cents change. And then, of course, I left my change in there, and you grab it, and you're like, hey, I found 45 cents. I'm like, what the hell? That's my money.
Well, yeah, you're the big winner of this. So
I know. That's why I didn't really bitch. Oh, man. But
hey, you know, the junk is make it cheap to get there. So that's really the only knock I got on Tunica, other than the kind of the lack of excitement, is that it's kind of tough to get there by plane. But, you know, the junket, Not bad. It's $212 or something, I think.
Yeah, we got a room out of it. We got transportation, essentially, because the shuttle did take you to both ends.
Yeah,
you just couldn't get to Hollywood. But, yeah, I had a great time, and I thought the price was really reasonable. And but, you know, if I have to wrap up this segment, I have to wrap it up with something. And listen, Annie Up Nation, if you don't do this, don't start. And if you do this, stop it. Okay? I'm tired of this. I've run into this mostly in Mississippi, but a real lot of times in Tunica. You're sitting there at the table. Guy wins a big pot. Tips the dealer. Hand gets dealt again. Guy folds his hand. Now he's bored and looking for a little ego boost and says, "Hey, dealer, did I get you? Did I get you, dealer?" You know, it's like they want the dealer to kiss their ass, you know, and just reaffirm that you're dealing for me, and, you know, I want to hear you tell everybody that I tipped you. And it forces the dealer to say again, "Yes, sir, thank you very much. Yes, sir, you did get me. Thank you very much." Cut it out. I'm tired of it. Cut it out. You know, and if you ask that question, tip them again.
Yes.
I'm tired of it.
I am with you on that, because every once in a while I do forget, and I don't do that. I am like, "Here," and I tip another dollar to them. And if they want to say, "Oh, that's fine, but you already got me," that's cool.
Yes.
Whatever.
Yes.
But yeah, you're right. These ego-boosting kind of fools out there got to go.
Oh.
Dealers are working for tips. Remember to tip them. If you can't remember you tipped them, tip them again.
That's right. Exactly. Because you know what? If you have to ask, then tough. Tip them. You know, it's your fault for asking. And if you're doing it just for an ego trip, stop it. It just ticks me off. And the next person does it near me, I'm going to say something. I'm going to say something.
Yes. Yes. I will be looking forward to that. I might actually just do it myself just to see what you say.
Well, I might actually get physical with you if you do it. So, oh, my God. But it was a great trip. Great time. We had a lot of fun. And I think now we need to listen to our pre-recorded Hand of the Week.
Hi, this is Team Poker Stars Pro Vanessa Russo, and you are listening to the Ante Up PokerCast.
You gotta fight for your right to play.
Chris, totally blessed here. Lee Childs, 3 weeks in a row.
The trifecta of Mr. Childs.
It's the triple crown of Childs. The triple Childs.
It's like triplets.
That's what we'll call it.
Triplets.
Lee, welcome back. Hope everything's going well still.
Me too, because we are recording this a little early, and I'm in Vegas right now by the time this is on the air. So hopefully I've, you know, won my first two bracelets of the summer, and things are going great.
Well, we
party
hope for that
suite.
Too,
hit
even though that means
suite.
That we would have to redo the Hand of the Week at that point.
Yeah, well, I'll call into the hotline, and maybe you'll like bump Doyle or something, and I'll be the featured guest that week or something.
All right, this week's hand comes from Corey, and I'm not parts unknown. He gave me his phone number and what he does, but we don't need really to tell anybody that. This didn't say where he's from, so we'll make him an exotic location. How about Honolulu, Hawaii?
Awesome.
Will that be fun? A little Magnum PI action here?
I've been there.
All right, he starts off, "Not sure if this will be good enough for Hand of the Week." Well, guess what, Corey? Apparently it is.
It's going to have to be.
All right, he says it's in his home game. Half of the people liked us playing this, the other half didn't. What we have, he says, is a weekly home game that usually has between 8 and 16 people in it. $10 buy-in with a $10 rebuy in the first hour of play. All right, they start with 12.50 in chips, and you can rebuy for 7.50. Blinds at 5 to 10 to start. This is the very first hand of the night.
But you can rebuy for 10 and get 7.50.
Yeah, sure.
Which is weird. Just make your amounts the same. Okay, go ahead.
All right. So not only are we getting hand analysis, but we're getting home tournament analysis.
I mean, why if it's $10? $10 is 1,250 chips. Then $10 should be 1,250 chips.
Maybe somebody didn't buy enough black chips or something, and you know they're trying to moderate it.
I'm sorry. Is this home tournament of the week or is this hand of the week?
All right,
here we go. It's the very first hand of the night again. Our hero is under the gun plus one, looks down at not one, but two aces, folks.
Sweet.
Wow. All right, he makes his usual raise of 3.5x, so it makes it 35 to go. He says this usually means nothing in our game and will be called by over half the field, and this time is only called by the big blind.
Okay, if that's the case, he needs to be raising more.
Exactly. I was thinking, well, if you know you're getting called by a bunch, why are you raising that much?
Thank you.
And being a rebuy, I would just consider shoving the hand in. You know, I play a lot of rebuys online, and that's pretty odd because you're usually not going to get paid on the hand anyway. So if you get lucky enough, somebody wakes up with like kings or queens or ace king, they're calling. And so I mean, I'm definitely raising more if you're expecting half your table to call.
Right.
Well, here's the thing. I know it's a rebuy, and Scott and I just played in a rebuy a little while ago in the Venetian, and there was a hand where I had aces, and I had like a guy raise and a guy call the raise, and it got to me, and I was massive chip leader at the time at my table, and I just shoved, and I got some dork to call me with king queen off, and he made a straight on the river, and I thought, you know what? If I had done a decent re-raise, he may have just called my re-raise. Then when the flop came dry, I could have shoved then. He wouldn't have called. Instead, I let him see all five cards, and he sucked out on me. So
yeah, but,
is there
but
a reason not to do that?
Yeah, well, see, that the thing is, that doesn't matter. Like you, that what matters is you got king-queen to commit all of his chips as a massive underdog to you.
Right.
And you have to look at it, you know, you have to look at the game from the long term of the game. And if you can do that over and over and over again, then that's great. I mean, that's a more profitable situation. Sure, it's not good for that one tournament. And you know, that's just looking at it in hindsight that it would have been better that time. You know, and I mean, I've run into that myself too, where I'm like, oh man, if I'd have just called pre-flop or if I hadn't, you know,
yeah.
But you can't do that. Like if you can get somebody to commit there when you have two aces, you know, if you can get somebody to call you when you have the nuts, then that's a good thing. And, you know, you are risking more, you know, it's why, like, I'm not going to just open shove first hand to the main event,
right, but
with two aces because it's too high of a risk. Even if I am going to be 80-20, I don't want a 20% chance of going out right then. But in a rebuy, I don't care. I don't care about that. So if I can get into an 80-20 situation, which is about the best you're ever going to be in, or even may even be better if they've got like ace king, then, you know, your play is still, that's a profitable play for you, even though you lost it.
Okay.
Excellent. All right. Well, again, we say it, a fold round of the big blind who called, and he says the big blind is a player that he has some history with for sure. Two times in the last 2 months, he's busted his huge pocket pairs on the first hand for his whole stack with ragged cards.
God.
He says at this point, he puts them on basically any two cards because of this, although I don't think he would have given me much credit for a real hand and may have three bet with a big hand. All right. Flop comes, seven of spades, five of diamonds, two of diamonds. One of our aces is a diamond, and our opponent leads out into us for 100.
Well, you know, we have the resident pro online, but I'd probably raise here just because he could have diamonds. I'd make it like 3 or 350 to go.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm raising like it's my, you know, it's like continuation raise is what it is. It's, you know, I'm not letting him take control of this flop. I mean, it looks like he, you know, he could have a draw. He could have, you know, just a seven. He could have some other, you know, an overpair to that board. And because of the history and everything, like it's anywhere from 300 to all your chips, given that it's a rebuy. If you can get this guy to commit, if he happens to flop a set here and he's actually ahead of you, then, you know, so what? You're going to rebuy and go on to the next hand, and you've got more chips on your table to try to get from him later.
All right.
Yeah.
He says this opponent doesn't usually overbet the pot, so I think he thinks that he wants him to take it right down right here. Whew.
Yeah, that's, I mean, fun. If they've got history where this guy, you know, if our hero here has been, you know, honing this guy for the past 2 weeks, then if this guy flopped a monster, he would likely check to him to try to trap him. So yeah. I would definitely like to raise in this spot.
All right, well, our hero does raise to 300 straight, and the opponent calls, so the pot's now 675, and they both have about 900 behind. And he says that as his villain called, the villain said that he says that our hero needs a diamond. All right, the turn is the 10 of diamonds. Yes, Lee.
He says, I've never heard him make this declaration, so I have no idea if this is the truth. I think that's a like a quote. The guy is saying that the villain is saying that the villain needs a diamond.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Very confusing. Very confusing.
Yeah.
All right, somebody needs a diamond here. We'll figure out who does.
I need a diamond because I'm the only one without the actual hand of the week in front of me, so this is brutal. Well, you guys are both reading the scripts here, and I'm sitting there going, all right, I might as well go on the line and say something.
No, I don't even remember. I read it quickly before, but he says he has no idea if this is the truth or not. He knows what he has. He has two aces,
right.
And one of them is the diamond. So if one diamond comes, then it is true that our hero needs a diamond to have a flush, because he still needs one more.
Right.
But the villain is saying that he's on a flush draw. Villain's saying he's on a draw.
Okay.
All right. Gotcha. All right. The turn card is the 10 of diamonds. And our villain checks to us.
I got no problem checking behind.
Yeah, check.
Yeah. Why not? I got a free roll to a nut flush. I still have aces in case this guy's, BSing us. And anything can happen on the river, so I like keeping the pot where I don't have to commit all my chips right now. So I'll check.
Yeah, I'm checking 7-5-2-10, and yeah, the draw to the nuts, and not going to cost you anything, and he's not going to check raise you. So you're right.
All right, well that's exactly what our hero does. Checks behind, and we see a river of deuce of clubs, which pairs the board, and our opponent checks into us again.
Yeah. Well, again, I have been known to miss a few value bets in my day. And, of course, when I do bet thinking I'm making a value bet, then they shove. So I'll check here and take down it. It's a pretty good pot for the first hand. There's 600, just like
675.
Yeah, it's almost 700, 800 in pot. So that's a huge first hand of the tournament. I'd be happy to check and take it down.
That, yeah, at 5-10 blinds.
Yeah.
he's got like an 80 big blind pot there. I don't really see any value in betting here. It doesn't seem like he can call, and if he can, then he's got the better hand. That,
right.
Given the history, he may be trying to finally trap and then laugh and say, I told you what I needed, and I got it, and you still bet into me, and just kind of play him like, Jamie Gold style there, I guess.
Yeah.
Saying exactly what he has, and people pay it off. So I check for sure. All you've got is one pair.
Yep.
And there's possible flush, and the board's paired itself, so... maybe he didn't need a diamond. Maybe he had a set. I don't know.
Yeah, he could have had like a deuce and hit three deuces on the end too. So trying to trap you again. I would just check.
Checking every time here.
All right. Well, our hero, again, they have some history there and deduced that he should bet here and threw a 500 chip out and his opponent insta-shoves. Which, of course, is only an extra 400 at this point.
Well now you got a call.
Yeah, which is terrible.
Yeah, I'm not folding for four. It's especially a rebuy, but I'm not putting in 500 and then folding
to 400 more.
400 more.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's exactly what happens. And our opponent turns over. Any guesses?
I'm going to say he has a deuce.
I have no idea. he should have the diamonds. If it was me and I had this history and I said that and I've got the diamonds there, And I trapped him, but I really don't know when this guy comes over the top, he's got to have either the deuce or the flush under normal circumstances.
All right.
Or a set. He could have flopped a set as well, and he was actually scared. Could have actually been scared of the flush.
And then made
if
the boat.
He had pocket fives or pocket sevens, or even, pocket deuces. He could have two deuces. Those are things where he said, I need a diamond, hoping the other guy didn't need one, and then he slowed down with his set. But then the board pairs, and now he's trying to trap and get the bet. So,
what's he ask, Scott?
All right, move that bus. Big reveal, 9-4 offsuit.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a real bad bluff there, because you can't fold.
Yeah.
All right, now here's...
He had no
here's...
fold equity there at all.
Now, the disgruntled villain here said he asked our hero how he could make that call.
This guy doesn't understand poker, that's the thing. You can't fold for that amount. There's so much in the pot. Both your stacks are completely in there for 400 more. You can't fold with aces there. It's terrible.
Yeah, and a lot of people make that mistake because the blinds are still small. So... you know, they would think, well, I've still got 40 big blinds, so I can fold here. And to a certain extent, that's kind of true, you know, because it is true. You're still going to have 40 big blinds, but why bet there? You're betting there because you think it's a value bet. And so once you put in that 500, you've got to call the additional four, especially when you're going to be able to rebuy.
Plus, the story doesn't add up. Checking it twice like that, there's just no way. So
yeah, that's a really good point.
Now, is there anything to be said for sometimes outthinking yourself when you have a history as a player? I mean, common sense would say that you can play a player better the better you know him. But I do know in our home game sometimes that I outthink myself.
Chris said you never have thought as, you know, on the same level as high as the rest of the group. But
I was thinking that.
I mean, it's easy to, you know, he said it would be easy for you to outthink yourself, but you haven't ever outthought any of
that. That's why it was pure silence there, Scott, because we were stunned you said that. I got to be honest there. I really got to be honest there.
Yeah, So you're saying that the guy who's making the bluff did, or?
Well, I mean, just in general. I mean, not so much this hand, but I mean, a lot of this hand was predicated on the fact that they had a history between each other, and I mean, I kind of see this stuff in it's kind of a classic dog and pony show kind of hand here from our home game, you know, where Faso and I are just betting on pure nads.
Yeah, well,
at some point you get wrapped up in that and forget to play poker.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, first of all, I have some fold equity. And, you know, I mean, obviously this guy was hoping that he was going to fold and the guy was going to show his bluff. And, you know, it's one of these cases where when our hero bets on the river, he doesn't necessarily have a hand from the other guy's perspective. So the 9-4 offsuit might not even be a bluff. You know, like, I mean, it really, you know, and yes, it will work in that case. The guy's going to fold. You know, I say you have to call and you really do mathematically, but I have made bets before where I know that I had to bet to win and I was leaving myself 10, 12, 15 big blinds if I got called. But, you know, I had to take a shot to try to do the pots were so big. And so it looks like I would want to be called and, you know, where I have nothing. So I obviously have to fold if they came over the top, but, you know, in this case, the guy wanted to just show his bluff. It was really bad timing the way he played it. Like Chris said, it didn't make sense. Checking twice with that board and then moving all in for less than what the bet was on the river. It was just an awful spot to do it. You definitely can outthink yourself. And I've done that too, where I think I've represented hands perfectly. And, you know, but it's like a real small buy-in tournament online and, you know, then I get called by third pair, and I think I've represented the flush perfectly. And it's a play that might have worked against somebody. You know, I think I've written at least once about this in the magazine where, you know, it might work against Phil Ivey, but it's not going to work against, you know, Joe Schmo.
Yeah.
And so you have to – it's your own fault when that happens. So you can't get mad at the other player and say, how can you make that call? You have to realize that you misplayed it and you shouldn't have made the bet. You shouldn't have tried to represent something that they're not going to get. That they're not going to be able to fold. So, the villain did a lot of things wrong here, I think. I mean, from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Well, Corey did a lot of things right, including winning this pot. The other great thing he did is send this hand the weekend, and we're going to reward him with a uncut sheet of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Anti-Up magazine from classicplayingcards.com. And, Lee, we hope you're doing very well out there in the series.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he's at the series, so we could be actually talking to a bracelet winner right now and not even know it.
It's highly likely.
I know. We'll be tracking your progress on Twitter and all the other sites. So,
all right.
Good luck out there, man.
Out there. Jenny and Braden are out here with me now.
Awesome.
and we're having a great time. And my dad and my boy Pat. And
oh my God!
It's awesome.
All right, man. Thanks for joining us.
All right, guys.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. contact us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Hello. Oh, dear. I'm Skyping from Ireland. I didn't hear anything, so if I'm on... Okay, let me try again. Bye.